BBC Caribbean Report.
Hurricane Jose spares the northeastern Caribbean. Very little damage was reported. The incoming ACP president discusses the task at hand, and a high court judge sentences a Dominican man to death. I'm Jessica Robertson, and this is BBC Caribbean Report. Residents in the northeastern Caribbean were cleaning up after being spared the full blast of Hurricane Jose late Wednesday and early this morning. The weather system has since been downgraded to a tropical storm as it heads out over open waters in the Atlantic. According to the regional disaster body, most of the islands reported minimal damage, but it appears as though Antigua fared the worst. Keystone Graves has the latest.
Officials at the Barbados-based Caribbean Emergency Response Agency, CIDERA, said that the core of the storm passed directly over Antigua. They said that the reports of damage received from the island indicated that a number of properties have been destroyed or damaged. Heavy rain hampered the efforts of Antiguan disaster officials to conduct a full assessment, but they have reported that all the major highways have been cleared of fallen debris. The temporary marketplace near the West Bus Station in the Antiguan capital, St. John's, comprising mainly tents, was extensively damaged. Early reports indicate that in the St. Paul's area, 42 persons have been left homeless. Tourism Minister Marwin Joseph said that there have been no significant damage to the island's hotels, which he said are gearing up for the winter tourist season. But emergency officials have identified the need for plastic sheeting for damaged roofs. CIDERA's Deputy Regional Coordinator, Audrey Mullings, said the body is generally satisfied with the early actions of the various disaster units.
Based on the response we have been receiving, it seems as if the pre-preparedness activities worked very well. In the case of CIDERA, we constantly monitored, placed our different partners on standby. The usual donor group meetings were held, and this morning we stood down the reconnaissance flight. We still have the other partners on standby in the event that Antigua needs support. So we are not standing down until we are sure that there will be no support needed from Antigua.
Meantime, in Anguilla, damage was minimal. The island's airport will reopen tomorrow after confirmation that the facilities in St. Martin and St. Kitts will do likewise. Schools, banks, and government offices are due to reopen Friday, and the power company in Anguilla says there's no need for outside help in restoring the service. In Montserrat, with its ongoing volcanic activity, the authorities reported very little damage and some small landslides. Similar reports about damage were also received from the U.S. and British Virgin Islands, Saba, St. Eustatius, and St. Martin. And it would be business as usual in Phillipsburg tomorrow. The 10th storm of the season followed a zigzag course, creating problems for the economic life and travel from as far south as Barbados all the way north to Puerto Rico.
Before Jose, though, there was Hurricane Irene, who dumped several inches of rain on Cuba, Jamaica, and the Cayman Islands. Official reports out of Cuba confirm that while the storm affected thousands of acres of cane fields in the central and western regions, the island's vital sugar harvest will not be significantly affected. The Communist Party daily newspaper Granma reports that 85,000 acres of cane were flooded when Irene hit land on October 14th, but of that, only 753 acres were a total loss. Sugar was once Cuba's primary source of income. Today, tourism has taken over as the country's top industry. Dominica's Prime Minister, Edison James, continued his banana lobby in Europe this week. He has been meeting with agriculture officials in both London and Brussels. Mr. James said during a meeting with Britain's agriculture minister, Nick Brown, that he was assured of that country's support in the ongoing banana dispute. The United States is still insisting that Europe's banana import system discriminates against the fruit produced on large plantations owned by multinationals such as Chiquita and Dole in Latin America. The World Trade Organization's disputes panel upheld a U.S. application for changes to the regime. Earlier, I spoke to Prime Minister James, who told me that he has been heartened by the U.K.'s support.
We also had the similar assurance from Baroness Scotland, the Foreign and Commonwealth Office. I've been in Brussels since yesterday afternoon and had discussions with the Development Cooperation Ministry. We had discussions with them as to what our position was. They had some concerns with respect to the Belgian government position, but they themselves in the Development Cooperation Ministry were more sympathetic to our cause. We anticipate some advocacy on the, from them towards support for our cause. This morning I had discussions with Commissioner Fischler and to get a feel of where they are in terms of the advancement of this process.
So it's safe to say that the Windward Islands are closer to working out a special arrangement with the EU for continued protection of the fruit from the islands?
We have been having discussions with the Americans and with the Ecuadorians, and I need to add that we also discussed with the Ecuadorian ambassador here today. We have the position that we've put forward and we've developed. Our understanding is that the United States trade representatives that we've been speaking to are sympathetic to our position. The Ecuadorians are. It would appear that the United States, their position is that they are not prepared to come forward and associate themselves with any documented position. But we've been talking to the EU about what that position is, how that, those discussions have been going. And we think in the context of the aftermath of the WTO ruling and the need for a negotiated settlement among the partners, I think in that context we are making some progress.
In recent months, as you said, there's been some dialogue with the Latin Americans to find a solution to the banana problem. Tell me a little more about how these talks have been progressing.
They've been going pretty well. We, the country we've been discussing with is Ecuador, really, and some of the trade people of Ecuador. Of course, Ecuador is the largest supplier of bananas to the EU market, and so they're a very, very important country and a group of organizations. So we've been having discussions with them, and we're happy with how they've gone, those discussions, both in St. Lucia, when I led the delegation there, and in Washington, and here in Brussels.
That was Dominica's Prime Minister, Edison James. St. Vincent and the Grenadines Trade and Industry Minister, John Horn, is getting ready to take over the presidency of the African, Caribbean, and Pacific grouping in Brussels on November 1st. Mr. Horn told BBC Caribbean Report that he's not daunted by the task. He said that most of the matters he'll be tackling almost immediately are hangovers from the last meeting. But the Vincentian minister expressed some concern about the way the changeover has been handled.
The EU had looked for a waiting period of about 5 years. The ACP preferred 10 years. Now, clearly, I think there's room for compromise here, and I think this will be one of the first tasks. In other words, to get unstuck some of these problems. And another one is the EU's distinct preference for ACP countries entering into regional economic partnership agreements, REPAs as they come to be known. These are a form of free trade area. And clearly the EU would like that to happen before any serious negotiations take place in the interim period.
Mr. Horn says he does not see the Caribbean being pressured into arranging a similar trading pact with the EU as South Africa has just done.
The ACP is a rather diverse region, if you can call it that, diverse grouping of countries. And what suits one area does not necessarily suit another. South Africa are quite happy in that arrangement. In the final analysis, the whole argument is the move from non-reciprocal free trade as exists towards free or partially free trade or partial reciprocity.
That was John Horn. You're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. A High Court judge in Dominica has sentenced a man to death for the brutal murder of his ex-girlfriend in November of 1998. It comes at a time when some Caribbean governments are under pressure from the international community to reconsider their stand on capital punishment. Matthias Peltier was in court this afternoon when the death sentence was read.
Judge Don Maksinek read the death sentence to 25-year-old Roger George from the northwestern community of Collio in Dominica shortly after 12:15 this afternoon, minutes after the nine-member jury gave the guilty verdict. On the 9th of November 1998, Roger George killed his ex-girlfriend Elfra Joseph, who lives more than 20 miles away in another village called Vekaz. George slashed her all over her body with a knife one witness described as 12 inches long, but it was the cut to her throat the pathologist said killed her. Minutes after the incident, George rode off in his motorcycle with a bloody murder weapon in his mouth. No motive was given during the trial, but there was much speculation that he may have been a jealous lover. Speaking from the prisoner's dock during the trial, George said he could not remember what happened on the day in question, telling the jury he was sorry. Local psychiatrist Dr. Devendra Sharma said the victim may have suffered from what he described as a dissociative disorder, but a case of temporary insanity put in by the defense did not find favor with the jury. The prosecution said it was a Rambo-type crime, describing it as calculated and premeditated. George showed no remorse as the judge read his death sentence, but his mother broke down in tears outside of the court as her son was taken away. A pin could have been heard drop as the judge uttered his final words, "May the good Lord have mercy on your soul." It was his second death sentence since coming to Dominica less than 2 years ago. Messiah Speltian Rosso for BBC Caribbean Report.
Bermuda's Premier Jennifer Smith says the island's offshore financial services sector is properly regulated. She was among the leaders from Britain's overseas territories in London this week for talks with Baroness Patricia Scotland, the junior foreign office minister responsible for the islands. The Caribbean states have been under pressure from Europe and the United States to tighten their laws on money laundering to prevent them from being used as tax havens by drug traffickers. I asked the Bermudian leader if, after the London conference, officials on both sides are in agreement on offshore finances.
We were satisfied before the OECD initiative that Bermuda's financial sectors were in fact properly regulated. And in fact, what we have spent our time doing for the past year in meetings with the OECD face-to-face and in other meetings involving the UK was making sure that they were aware of exactly what structures Bermuda had in place. We have been satisfied, in actual fact, for a couple of months that OECD, in particular one of their committees, was aware of the high standards that Bermuda have, of the regulatory structure, and we have, in fact, put into place those other initiatives that we did not have because Bermuda, as a leading light in the financial services industry, wants to be a part of the global economy, a part of the global players, and we certainly want to do our part to see that Bermuda remains in the forefront of those jurisdictions that are known for high standards.
Why do you think there's this push by the U.S. and Europe to clean up the offshore financial sector?
Well, I think there are a number of reasons, but, I mean, prime among them would be the fact that technology means that money and also jobs can move immediately, and in actual fact would be very difficult to trace. And since this is a problem which affects a number of countries, and a problem which in the long term could in fact affect Bermuda as well, it's a problem we all want to combat. One of the ways of combating that was to ensure that across the globe, as much as could be possible, giving different cultures, different legislative environments, that we had some agreements that would help us all work together.
Now let's talk about the UK White Paper. The homosexuality and capital punishment were outlined in that document. Are these major concerns for Bermudians?
Well, in actual fact, the homosexuality was not a concern for Bermuda. That had already been done under the previous government. The only thing under the human rights issues that Bermuda still maintained was capital punishment, and we've already indicated that we will be presenting legislation to abolish that.
Bermuda is mainly self-sufficient and can tell Britain where to stop. Do you anticipate any problems with London if it decides to impose by an order in council new reforms on the laws relating to capital punishment?
We had not, in fact, carried out the death threat since the 1970s. And, in fact, every death sentence that had been given since which has been commuted by the governor. And we, in actual fact, have stated on the floor of the House of Assembly that we'll be bringing an amendment to Parliament to abolish the death penalty.
What kind of time frame would you expect for something like that to happen?
For the death penalty, probably within the next legislative session.
Bermuda's Premier Jennifer Smith. And once again, the northeastern Caribbean came out of Hurricane Jose relatively unscathed. Well, that's it for BBC Caribbean Report. Just a reminder that
this and our other programs can be accessed on our internet website, at www.bbc.co.uk/Caribbean.
Join us at 11:05, 11:15, and 12:10 GMT for our next morning programs. I'm Jessica Robertson, saying goodbye from London.